Empty Set Entertainment presents Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto, performed by Scott Sigler. This story is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised.
Howdy, junkie. Big news in the world of Slay. Slay Season 1's ebook and audiobook publication date has moved to May 1st, 2024. May 1st? May Day? Nah, fam, now it's Slay Day! We will have this lovely, heartwarming, wholesome Hallmark story narrated by me, available as a full-length audiobook, yes, and as an ebook. Print date is not yet set. We will probably do hardcover, bound like the beautiful hardcover edition of The Crypt, Shakedown, and paperback at some point. We haven't locked down those details just yet. As soon as the Audible pre-order is available, we will let you know. The Kindle pre-order is available now, although at the moment it says April 1st, 2024. We have put in for that change. It takes a while to cycle through their system. April 1st, of course, is Sigler Ascension Day. We were shooting for that day for Slay's release, but we couldn't quite pull it off. And that's the news on Slay Season 1. Now let's get back to Slay Season 2. Let me get you caught up on the story so far. Then we're all gonna throw that damn rabbit into that damn briar patch. Previously on Slay. Lincoln killed Loloa in Louisiana, but had to face off against her familiar, a giant python, intent on dragging Lincoln to the bottom of the swamp. On that mission, Magda used the bauble recovered from the Lich in Lynchburg to mentally join Lincoln, seeing what he saw, hearing what he heard. It was the first time Magda had been involved in a hunt since her and Lincoln's disastrous encounter with Vestinian. And now, Slay, episode 50. Maybe Magda didn't outright hate Ariella anymore, but it was still a fun time when the woman got all pissed off. Ariella had a scroll in front of her, open from her nose down to her waist. "Let me get this straight," she said. "I have not one, but two morons working for me who can't be bothered to let a lawyer review a contract." A shirtless Lincoln lay on the beer pong table, his battered armor and cloak piled haphazardly on the floor beneath. Link, armor, and cloak alike stank like the swamp he had just come from. 2 dozen snake-tooth puncture wounds dotted his chest, his left arm, and his left shoulder. Magda slid a Carofactor worm into one of the puncture wounds. Link winced as it wiggled in deep. "Unbelievable," Ariella said. "Do you two just sign whatever anyone puts in front of you?" Lincoln propped himself up on one elbow. "Man, keep me out of this," he said. "My name's Bennett, and I ain't in it. Billy did this one on his own." Magda slid in another Carofactor. 2 more to go. She had watched the whole thing through Lincoln's eyes. The giant snake had bitten him, tried to coil around him and drag him into the water. An enraged Link had hacked away with Bastard Maker, managed to split the snake's spine on the 4th blow, just before being pulled overboard. "Man, I had to sign that contract," Billy said. "If I didn't, Drummond would have delayed training for like a month." He was still lying on the new couch, still exhausted from his first magic lesson. The back of his hand rested against his forehead as if it was an overly put-upon Southern belle. Dragon lay on his chest, her nose close to his face, her little tail twitching. "A whole month." Ariella lowered the scroll. "Really, Billy? You couldn't wait 4 weeks so I could look over a contract with an injury waiver so broad Drummond could sacrifice your balls to Beelzebub and I couldn't even sue him for it?" Billy rolled to his side. Dragon curled up in the crook of his legs. "Man, let me alone," Billy said. "I got enough problems as it is." Lincoln laughed, the sound cut short by a hiss of pain as Magda slid another slimy worm into another tooth hole. Ariella turned to face him, anger simmering in her eyes like some invisible version of Link's haze of Cimarron. "Oh, you think this is funny?" She rolled up the scroll, shook it at Link, like it was a rolling pin and she was a 50s housewife yelling at her kids. "How about you, Mr. Why don't I see if I can kill a 50-foot magic python with my bare hands? You know I have a business to run here, right? And at the moment, you're the only factory that this business has?" Lincoln laid flat on the table. "Don't be ridiculous," he said. "It wasn't bare hands. I was wearing my gauntlets. And there's no need to exaggerate. That snake wasn't an inch over 45 feet. Magda held back a laugh of her own. This might not be the best time to give Ariella shit, but Link sucked at reading the room. "Oh, so it was a little baby then," Ariella said. "Only 45 feet, huh? Sure, no point in using your... what is that ridiculous name that you call that overcompensating midlife crisis of a rifle? Oh yes, the ding-dong big schlong. Or your crossbow that has fucking explosive hellfire bolts, Lincoln?" Lincoln shrugged, an awkward movement with him lying on his back. "I was mad," he said. "Oh, and Magda didn't think I could cut its head off. That hurt my feelings." Magda had said he couldn't cut the head off with one chop. It had taken Lincoln four. She slid a worm into the last puncture hole with a bit more force than was required. "Ouch," Lincoln said, twitching away from her.
"Oh, golly, my bad," Magda said. "All done. You'll be fine in an hour or so."
Link sat up and swung his legs over the side of the table.
"Thanks," he said. "I appreciate it. Man, I need some sleep."
"You can sleep later," Ariella said. "Droman called. He's got emergency business. You need to go guard Delilah at the mansion."
Lincoln groaned.
"What? Now? What time is it?"
5 a.m., Ariella said. "He wants you there at 6, and don't even think about not going. This is the only guaranteed money we have."
Lincoln glanced enviously at Billy, who was out like a light, as was Dragon.
"I'll be there," Lincoln said. "Megs, can you patch up my armor before I go?"
Magda glanced under the beer pong table at the hole-ridden breastplate and left pauldron. That snake had been strong as fuck. Link was lucky to be alive. Patching the holes wouldn't take long. And then, finally, she could get high. And drunk. And then high again. Anything to stop thinking about the Umatakan claws slicing through her skin and muscle, scraping against her bones.
"Yeah, I can," she said. "I'll try to get that swamp funk out of your gear, but no promises."
Hey, this is Scott, the author of this story. This episode is sponsored by Regal Unlimited, which is all about movies. I love movies, and you can see that in my work, from the references to films to the movie quotes I embed in my dialogue and the summer blockbustery big action sequences that close out each novel. If you like going to the theater like I do, because that's where movies are meant to be enjoyed, Regal Unlimited makes perfect sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. See any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And don't forget the snacks, man! With Regal Unlimited, you get 10% off all non-alcoholic concession items. So if you're planning to see two or more movies this month, you need to join. Remember, Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. Sign up now in the Regal app or at regmovies.com/unlimited. That's regmovies.com/unlimited. Use the code SIGLER024 and earn 10% off a three-month subscription. That's SIGLER024 to earn 10% off a three-month subscription.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Piura stands as a miraculous green haven. Piura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Piura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Piura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Sehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Link sat heavily on the couch in Delilah's computer room. It was too damn early for this. He needed a drink. No, Delilah, you can't paint my nails. Delilah held up two nail polish files. Oh, come on, please. This one is called Teal the Cows Come Home because it's teal. It would really bring out the gray in your eyes. And this one is called Toucan Do It If You Try. It's kind of like a salmon color, which isn't your color, but I know you like birds. Couldn't she just ask him to drink some imaginary tea or something? Did 13-year-olds still do that? I'm your bodyguard, Delilah. I'm not your toy. The girl affected a practiced pout. You're no fun. I am like the most fun ever, Lincoln said. For example, I just chopped the head off a giant swamp snake. You want to hear about it? No, not really. Sounds cruel. What was the snake's name? Lincoln's nose wrinkled. Name? Yes, the snake's name, Delilah said. Was it a pet? It was 50 feet long. Do you know how long 50 feet is? 16.6 yards, Delilah said. 15.2 meters. Was it a pet or not?
Well, I mean, it was a familiar.
Like your raven? For fuck's sake, what was it with smart young people who couldn't accept that some ravens identified as crows?
Yes, like Shitbird, Lincoln said. And Shitbird is not a pet.
But it has a name, Delilah said. And it is a familiar. Therefore, the snake you killed, which was a familiar, probably had a name. Do you know what it was?
A drink and maybe a Xanax or three.
Oh, now I remember, Lincoln said. Its name was, if you find teenagers that ask too many questions, please cut their head off, too, so I have some company in hell. Delilah put the vials back on a shelf that had dozens more.
"That's a long name," she said. "Do you want to paint my nails instead?"
This was going to be a long shift.
"Do you paint your nails with your friends or something?"
Delilah flopped into the big chair. She picked up the TV's remote, but didn't turn it on.
"I don't have a lot of friends," she said. "Daddy doesn't trust people, and that was before,
before a professional kidnapper came through her roof, killed her former bodyguard, and tried to spirit her away.
"Yeah, I know," Lincoln said. "No friends from school, though?"
"I'm homeschooled. Morgan teaches most of the lessons, which is annoying because I'm smarter than her and we both know it. I've asked Daddy for a tutor, but, like I said, he doesn't trust people. He trusts you, though, which is weird. No offense."
"None taken," Lincoln said. "Hell, I don't trust me."
Through maneuvering or manipulation, Delilah had gotten Kellius to stop insisting Morgan be there every moment. Morgan was somewhere in the mansion, but hadn't tried to get into Delilah's computer room.
"Daddy said he knows you're a professional," Delilah said. "That I can be alone with you and you won't try to grab my butt or anything."
Lincoln laughed.
"Your dad has a way with words. Mine's the same. That reminds me. I gotta see my dad pretty soon.
Do you go to his house? Is it the one you grew up in?"
Now, wouldn't that have been a pretty picture straight out of a Hallmark movie?
"He lives in an old folks' home," Lincoln said. "He can't take care of himself anymore."
"Oh, I'm sorry to hear that."
And it wasn't just words. She meant it. Lincoln could see it on her face. What a nice kid.
"Thanks," he said, not knowing what else to say. "Sometimes adult stuff can be a fucking pain in the ass."
"That's what Daddy says. Not with curse words, mind you, but pretty much the same thing."
Lincoln fought back an automatic, "Oh, gee, does the poor little billionaire have it hard?" But he caught himself in time.
"It's nice you go see your dad," Delilah said. "Do you like him? Was he a good dad?"
The way she asked made Lincoln think she was wondering the same thing about Kellius.
"I used to like my dad," Lincoln said. "When I was your age, I liked him a lot."
"But not anymore?"
He could tell her a lie, but lying about Jacoby Franks wasn't going to bring Delilah and her father any closer.
"To be honest, my dad wasn't around that much," Lincoln said. "When he was, he had, expectations. Ones I guess I could never meet."
Saying the words unleashed pent-up feelings Lincoln had thought long forgotten. Why did talking to this wide-eyed teenager about their respective dads stir up old emotions? Maybe because she was going through the very same thing. Not in some past life separated by decades of experience, but now, at an age when everything felt so much bigger, so much more.
"Let me guess," Delilah said. "Your dad wanted you to go into the family business?"
Lincoln laughed, lifted part of his cloak to reveal his armor.
"You hit the nail right on the head," he said. "Why, does your pops want you to run his empire?"
Delilah glanced off, bitted her lip.
"Yes, he does. And he wants me to be a mage like him."
She shrugged.
"I guess I'm just not that into either. I just want to be normal."
Normal. A wonderful dream for those who could attain it. Lincoln couldn't. And, sadly, he suspected that Delilah couldn't either.
"So where is your old man today anyway?" Lincoln asked. "Breaking a union? Making deals with the Russians? Maybe leveling an old-growth rainforest?"
Delilah slumped back into her chair.
"He's not on business," she said. "He's looking for that man that tried to kidnap me."
What was this bullshit? Lincoln had told Droman that he would get Teddy Two Fingers.
"That sneaky motherfucker," Lincoln said. "He gets to hunt Teddy while I have to babysit."
His voice trailed off when he saw the hurt in Delilah's eyes. babysit, she said. And, yeah, I guess my dad is a motherfucker, or I wouldn't be here, right?
Damn it. Sometimes Lincoln's mouth could get a head start on his mind.
I didn't mean it like that, he said.
Delilah was only a kid, but she was no dummy.
Whatever, she said. Do you want to watch a movie? You can pick it out. But nothing with violence. I don't like that. And nothing with cursing. Daddy doesn't like that.
Which meant no movie that Lincoln would like. Delilah sat up straight.
Daddy's home.
She shot out of the chair, moved around the room, eyes darting here and there.
What are you doing? Lincoln asked. I'm looking for messes. Daddy doesn't like messes.
Yeah, Kelly Stroman seemed like a real Father of the Year candidate. A knock at the door. Delilah, may I come in? The girl glanced around again, then ran her hands over her blonde hair to smooth it, but it was already neat as a pin and gleamed like polished gold. She hurried to the door and opened it.
Hi, Daddy.
She hugged him, hard. Maybe he was a stickler for bullshit rules, but the girl clearly loved him. Seeing that hug made Lincoln's heart sink. When would he ever see his own child again?
Hello, sweetheart, Kelly said. Franks, I will pay you for your full shift. You can go home, but I'd like to show you the grounds first. And then there's something I know you will want to see.
Droman's mansion was one of several built on the crest of Barren Ridge. Way back when, the ultra-rich vied for elaborate homes there, with little land, as opposed to sprawling estates far outside the city. While Droman's grounds were bigger than those of his neighbors, it didn't take long to walk them. Lincoln and Droman strolled along the marble walkway that ran across the sides and back of the mansion. Lincoln noticed that Droman, or Morgan, or whoever did the maintenance here, hadn't fully cleaned off the skid marks left by his bike the night he had rescued Delilah.
You've seen my lovely arborvitae at work, Droman said. I'll show you the other defenses.
He pointed to a dirt patch inside the outer wall's northwest corner.
I planted 3 Venus mantraps there. You'll want to avoid them.
I'll make a note, Lincoln said.
Most of the grounds consisted of the arborvitae, the fountain, lush bushes, fruit trees, a few old hardwoods, and flowering vines. A beautiful place to live, although Lincoln had a hunch that, as far as Delilah was concerned, it was probably more of a prison.
The southwest corner has the strangle vines, Droman said. Avoid those as well. Poison pollen puffballs abound throughout. Delilah knows where they are.
Lincoln planned on spending as little time outside the mansion as possible. So far, Delilah seemed to be a homebody, which suited Lincoln just fine. Hard to protect her out in the open, even with Droman's murderous plants present.
Morgan tells me my daughter has taken a liking to you, Droman said. Not that I couldn't have guessed myself when I saw the bill for the motorcycle she ordered.
With the options Lincoln had picked out, the Italian Volt LaCama Biposto was easily over 60 grand. Plus, there was a hefty price in gold for the meshwork additions.
Delilah has excellent taste, Lincoln said. She seems like a good kid.
Droman stopped walking. He reached out toward an apple tree branch just starting to grow fruit. The branch reached out to him, met him halfway.
She is a wonderful child, he said. Although she's quite willful. Hopefully soon I can break her of that. I do not like it when she goes against my wishes.
A teenage girl won't do exactly what her father says, you say? Gee, that sounds like completely uncharted territory.
Droman released the branch.
I find your efforts at wit to be tedious and tiring, he said. I prefer those in my employ to be more deferential.
And I find you to be a pompous asswipe. You pay the tab, Green Thumb, but Delilah is the one I'm protecting.
So don't delude yourself into thinking I'll give you a bullshit smile and blow sunshine up your ass. Cool?
Droman gestured down the tree-lined marble walkway. They started walking again.
You keep Delilah safe, and there is much I will let slide, Droman said.
Speaking of Delilah, she told me you're out looking for Teddy. That true?
Droman nodded.
I will find him. I will make him pay.
Damn, this rich asshole was annoying. I told you Teddy was mine, Lincoln said. Mine.
Yes, I heard you the first time, Franks.
Lincoln didn't have time to hunt Teddy. When he wasn't guarding Delilah, Ariella would have him hunting down bounties to get treasure needed to pay Kalista for Sam's protection.
Any luck yet? Lincoln asked. That glamrock wannabe fuckstick is hard to find.
Droman stopped, faced the row of immaculate bushes that ran along the mansion's west wall. The bushes parted, sliding like living curtains, to reveal a door that looked like the building's wall. Not a hidden door, exactly, but one that was easily missed by someone who didn't already know it was there.
There's an item in the other ballroom that I want to show you, Droman said.
The other ballroom? You have two?
The mage wiggled his fingers. The door silently swung inward, revealing a marble staircase heading down, heavy brass railing on either side.
This used to be a speakeasy, Droman said, way back in Prohibition. To answer your question, no. I have had no luck finding that bastard, but my search has only begun.
Lincoln feigned a shocked expression and put his hand to his armored chest.
Bastard? Golly gee, Kellius, do you kiss your mother with that mouth?
Droman stared daggers, then started down the steps. Lincoln followed. Antique brass light fixtures lit the stairwell, the white walls, and the crimson wainscoting. Lincoln could easily imagine well-dressed gangsters, businessmen, and women in flapper dresses heading down in pursuit of hot jazz, gambling, and illegal drinks.
I did develop one lead, Droman said. It turned out to be nothing, so far.
An ornate hosting station stood near the bottom of the stairs. Mahogany, maybe. People didn't make stuff like that anymore. Past it, a coat room counter, and 10 feet further back, a very fancy door with a closed, hinged viewer.
Hell of a place you got here, Lincoln said. Watch out for Delilah throwing a party down here while you're off on one of your countless business trips.
My daughter may be willful, but she knows she's not allowed down here. This room is mine and mine alone.
He opened the door. Lincoln followed him through.
Maybe it had been a speakeasy a century ago, but now it was a wizard's sanctum. A crazy combination of antique architecture, meshwork lab, and greenhouse.
Potted plants of all different shapes, sizes, and colors filled every nook and cranny. Tables with piles of scrolls. A vine-strewn bookshelf filled with old tomes and dozens of meshwork talismans.
This way, Droman said.
He walked along a narrow path that wound through the endless botanical clutter. The path led to an old bar top covered with potted plants and overgrown with flowering creepers.
Lincoln stopped cold.
Behind and above the bar, where rows of illuminated bottles might have once rested, was a dense tangle of thick, thorny vines. And in that tangle, wrapped up by it, a naked, bleeding man, his arms spread wide in an evil mockery of a welcome gesture, his eyes darting and blinking madly with insanity brought on by intense, enduring pain.
Thoko Chikandi, the man who had sold Teddy Two Fingers the carpet he had used to slip past Droman's defenses.
Curls of fibrous stems held his arms and legs apart. Thorny vines grew into his thighs, his calves, his forearms, his biceps. A vine had curled into his open mouth and punched out the bottom of his jaw like a heavy, bark-covered fishhook, effectively gagging him. A creeper, bristling with barbs, ran into a bloody, bruised hole in his belly near his right hip, came out under his sternum, then into him again at his left pec. Wicked green spikes grew from a root to pierce his cock and balls. Blood trickled slowly from his wounds, soaking into stems and leaves. Lincoln thought of the skinned family hanging from the rafters of the Loa's cabin. Was this any less barbaric?
"This guy's just a thief," Lincoln said. "He didn't know Teddy was coming after Delilah, and he doesn't know where Teddy is now."
"I agree on both points," Drummond said, "although it did take me a few hours to reach that conclusion. Sadly for this man, whether he knew it or not, he was involved. Don't insinuate this is some innocent soul, Franks."
Lincoln's thoughts flashed back to the hidden room beneath Callista's club, to the emaciated corpses engulfed by desiccated, long-dead Jurogumo amoebas. This wasn't that dark magic, not by any stretch, but it was just as wicked, just as cruel.
"Drummond, this is sick."
The mage's mouth curled into a smirk. "That's rich coming from you," he said. "As if you'd do any less if you got Teddy Two Fingers alone."
"I'd kill Teddy, not torture him."
Drummond gestured to Thoko, crucified and dying on a hellish briar patch.
"Then you and I are like-minded," the mage said. "I am killing Thoko. As for the torture, it's a message I will send through Cordis to demonstrate what happens when one goes after my family."
Drummond didn't know this enemy as well as Lincoln did.
"You think Teddy's going to see this and back off?" Lincoln said. "It's not going to happen. Teddy won't stop. If you really want to keep Delilah safe, you stay here 24/7 and let me go out and hunt."
Drummond raised a finger, made a gesture with it. All the vines moved, like a tangle of thorn-covered snakes, tightening their various holds on Thoko, squeezing him until a choked, muffled gurgle of a scream came out. Lincoln heard bones snap. Thoko choked. He twitched, what little he could twitch. A shudder ripped through his body once, twice. Then he fell limp and gurgled no more. He was dead.
"The difference between you and me, Franks, is that I will find Two Fingers," Drummond said. "The demise of his associate here should keep him at bay until I can track him down."
Lincoln realized this wasn't just about keeping Delilah safe. Not to Drummond. He wanted to protect his daughter, yes, but he also wanted to avenge his battered pride. Someone had shown the audacity to try and take his daughter in his own home, and that was not something he could simply let go. Drummond was a fool. A rich fool. A powerful fool, but a fool nonetheless.
"My shift is over," Lincoln said, suddenly feeling very tired. "I'm out of here."
He headed back up the marble stairs. He really needed that drink. Not at the Old Stone Church. At least not yet. He needed time to himself. A friendly face. That's what he needed. One without the attached guilt of Magda, the attached responsibility of Billy, the attached demands of Ariella. Maybe Stooley's bar was open. And maybe Maylene was the one pouring drinks.
You have been listening to Slay, created by Scott Sigler and Rob Otto. Performed by Scott Sigler. Copyright 2024, Empty Set Entertainment. For more info on Scott Sigler, his novels, short stories, and podcasts, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song They're Watching Me by the band Super Weapon. We'll be right back.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.